go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we are, the 20th day of May, 2014, 6.01 p.m. here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com is our home. That's where you'll find a selection of the day's news for your examination and delectation. You'll also find, of course, the pop-up internet player, although a lot of people choose to listen on TuneIn Radio and Stitcher. You know, there are other ways now. So any way is fine as long as you're listening. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Also at headonradionetwork.com, you'll find entrance to the chat room, which I am in this evening as opposed to yesterday evening. Hey, too much to explain, but suffice to say that I'm tickled pink to be there. Agnes tells me from the home studio that the sound is quite good. Thank you, dear. Much obliged, indeed. The other thing, of course, at headonradionetwork.com, the ever-present and looming PayPal button. And we have a PayPal button because, of course, that's how we keep all of this going. Your contributions, your determination that we will, in fact, have independent broadcasting, wildly devoid of Buy Gold Now ads and ads for Bose Wave radios and ads for mattresses on which you can bounce a bowling ball and pick it up with a Swedish vacuum cleaner. Oh, God, who knows? Who knows? Who knows? Anyone caring to help us keep this the lights lit? Well, we try to raise $150 an evening. 15 at 10, 15 folks at 10 apiece, 10 folks at 15 apiece, 2 at 75, 3 at 50. And we have I had a note right after airtime last night, a note from our buddy Robert in Australia, who said it's 2:07 p.m. May 20th, 2014 here in Sydney, which I think makes it just after midnight where you are. And I think he was right. So it's time once again for my 20th of the month Down Under Up Over challenge. It's $50 this month. I budget for $50 each month and sadly can't make it any higher this month. Bills, 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 of course. And, Lord, that's plenty. That is plenty, Robert. So we have the $50 20th of the month Down Under Up Over challenge, courtesy of Robert in Australia. Robert says it would be nice if a couple of people could match that 50 with 50 of their own. Let's get out of the hole and up onto a hill for as long as we can possibly be there. And I agree wholeheartedly with Robert because we showed up with a little bit of a hole. We closed last night about $160 behind. Overnight, that was remedied, thanks very kindly to folks like John. And thanks going out to I've got it right here in my email. Sometimes the notifications get a little bit hidden, one behind the other, and that's the case here. But thanks also going out to Barb. Thank you very much. And we did have a subscription come in overnight, and the subscriptions are very nice because as long as folks can make that happen, well, it means that that's that much more that can, you know, it's kind of like the way Robert budgets. But the upshot is that we close the gap down to $115. And that means that tonight we just need and thank you to Bernice. Bernice, thank you very much. Her subscription payment came in over the evening. That means that we are at $165, so $265 gets us all the way out of the hole. So as Robert noted, if somebody will meet his challenge and somebody will reach out, and we can get this done fairly quickly. Thank you. Asa jumping out there very quickly so that we are well on the way to meeting Robert's challenge. Thank you, Asa. Thank you very kindly. Now, where do we go this evening? This is, of course, Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. We are live from the headquarters of the AIC campaign, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Campaign on Capitol Hill. It may very well be our last trip here because for want of support from people who should be supportive. And by that, I'm not talking about the individuals who support this. I mean, there's a lot of organizations out there that say things like, oh, we'd very much like to end mountaintop removal. And then some hillbillies come up here and get a law that would introduced in Congress that would end mountaintop removal. And we say, hey, do you want to support the effort? And they go, oh, we didn't think you'd really be able to do that. I hear my mother come. What? You sent us a request for support? I think our rare endangered ocelot ate it. So that's where we are. The AIC campaign is not going to come to an end, but our ability to run the AIC campaign the way it was designed to be run, i.e. with a permanent presence constantly working on the bill here in Washington, D.C., may be severely compromised to the point of not being able to do it anymore. So that's that. Where to go? Okay, it's Titanic Tuesday. We celebrate on Titanic Tuesday the Titanic intellect of the right wing. And I got a couple of profoundly good exemplars of the concept of Titanic genius on the part of the right wing. There's an outfit out there called, and I don't know if you're familiar with them or not, the League of the South. It sounds like some sort of superhero comic in which the superheroes run around slapping each other in the face with a glove or something. Super heroines in hoop skirts, who knows. But no, what they are is a bunch of nasty, right-wing, unreconstructed, racist Klansmen wannabe. So last year, down in Tallahassee, Florida, Stan, they put up a billboard. And it's, you know, full billboard size. And it just says, secede. That's all it said. Michael Hill co-founded the League of the South back in 1994. Their goal, the League of the South says, is for Southern secession to set up what they call an Anglo-Celtic run Christian theocracy. You know, one of those where people get stoned to death when they, I don't know, wear fibers that are, where polycotton blends or eat shrimp. No, they want an Old Testament theocracy. Well, okay, New Testament too, because they're going to put Jesus in the middle of it. You know, you'd think a guy who was murdered by the state in a capital punishment case, you'd think that maybe he wouldn't be so approving of capital punishment, but they kind of invented him. you know, right-wing fundamentalists think of Jesus as a sort of ventriloquist dummy that they can put on their lap and have say whatever it is that needs saying. Things like, stone the dark-skinned people in the name of Jesus. Right? Yeah. So, no, they so it was earlier this year in Tallahassee, they put their billboard up, and it says, secede. And it stayed up for 2 months, and miraculously. And it just, it's big board, says secede, and then names the name of the organization, League of the South, and then it gives their website address, which I'm not going to give. Well, they apparently there was no pushback in Tallahassee, which tells me a little something about Tallahassee. Does it tell you anything? Marty noting, Anglo-Celtic? Does that mean I should ever visit Ireland? You can't hold these Klansmen against Ireland. The Irish probably would find this deeply disturbing. It says secede. So flush with their success in Tallahassee, and this is the good news part of the story, flush with their success in Tallahassee, the League of the South went and got themselves a billboard in Montgomery, Alabama. Not too awful far from the billboard stands right over the green highway marker that says, First White House of the Confederacy, Union Street. Isn't that hilarious? First White House of the Confederacy and Union Street on the same sign, but whatever, you know, and you turn left to get there. And it's the same billboard. It says secede and League of the South and their URL, which I'm not sharing. Only, and like I said, this is the good part of the story. Only having put up the billboard, Lamar Advertising, who put up the billboard, immediately took it back down because in really every time you say, can't we just and I see it among liberals and progressives all the time. Can't we just let the South secede this time? I mean, could we tell them they had to leave? It's terribly cute when you see that. But lo and behold, unlike Florida, Stan, motorists and Alabamian motorists even, complained in significant numbers to Lamar Advertising. And you know what they said? They said, oh, we see you're supporting a secede billboard. Good for you. Know what that means? We're going to contact every blessed company we find that has a billboard through your company, and we're gonna say, listen, I'm not gonna do business with your company because the company that is renting you the billboard has allowed a secede billboard to go up. So I don't want to do business with anybody who does business with secessionists. Nice, huh? See, the right wing used to love to do that, to chase people off the air. I remember when they chased Phil Donahue off MSNBC for daring to question the intelligence of, attacking a country that had never attacked us. You know, Iraq. Yeah. But now, all of a sudden, they're not so fond of the same tactic. Now, this is the same tactic that's pretty much largely removed Flush Flemball from a whole bunch of stations. Well, Michael Hill, upon finding out that his secessionist billboard in Alabamistan had been pulled, he got righteously pissed off. Oh, yes. He said, the message is not offensive, it's not immoral or unethical. Secede. 600,000 people dead, some of them Americans, some of them traitors, who had effectively renounced their citizenship by engaging in treason against the United States. Yeah, 600,000 people dead between 1861 and 1865. Who knows how many more died of their wounds after the close of hostilities. And by the way, I think I may have neglected to mention that the League of the South has been designated a hate group by the hate group clearinghouse that is the Southern Poverty Law Center. Yeah, they're a hate. Well, I mean, what? How can you be anything but a hate group if you're putting up billboards that say secede? But Michael Hill, I mean, he did get his antebellum bloomers in a bunch. Yes, Jack in Shreveport, it is pronounced business. Yes. I sort of left the element there for a moment. But here's the thing. I think we have to parse Michael Hill's words in his petulant complaining about not having his secessionist billboard up anymore. He said, and I mentioned this a moment ago, and this is the quote, the message is not offensive, it's not immoral or unethical. The story I'm looking at here does note that Hill did concede, not secede, but concede, that the message is controversial. But in the things that he mentioned that it's not, he forgot one, because he would have been dead wrong if he'd said it. The message is not offensive, it's not immoral or unethical or treasonous, because, see, that's the thing. Arguing secession is treason. When you argue secession, you instantaneously become a traitor to the United States of America. You also happen to spit on the graves of all of the people who fought to keep the Union together and died to keep the Union together. You know, it's a pity the Obama administration bought up all them damn bullets because, never mind, firing squads, no. But I guess we don't do treason trials anymore, do we? Uh-uh. I mean, we had a really good open public debate about this issue in Tallahassee. Nobody got their pants in a wad about it. Did I mention that the Southern Poverty Law Center is headquartered in Montgomery, Alabama? Stupid. Hill said his group is exploring other options, even as members contact the advertising company to ask it to reconsider. Hill continue, is this America, or is it Stalin's Russia, where you shut down any opposition and dissent? Well, see, nobody shut down dissent here. Lamar Advertising merely refused to participate in treason. And there is no First Amendment guarantee of the right to commit treason. It's not there. That is politically the equivalent of yelling fire in a crowded theater. no, this is not Stalin's Russia. This is the United States of America, dipshit, which you still live in which case it is treasonous to argue secession. But then again, these are the same clowns who argued that they wanted the government shut down when questioning the validity of the public debt is an act of treason forbidden by the Constitution itself. That's true. No, we don't have treason trials, and Jan notes in the chat room, because if we did, Count Dicula and Bushwhacker, I won't use the words Jan did, would be at The Hague. Secede. When I first saw this story today, I had to look twice at the billboard because I was almost convinced that it was going to be spelled S-E-C-D-E-E, SecD. And that's true, Marty. Marty noting, you know, there's also no constitutionally protected right to have one's message up on someone else's billboard, no matter how much they're paid. This is that free market thingy they like until they don't like it anymore. Go figure, you know, aut ne ute ait bre if you one what I in me. Wonder if Michael Hill was up there for the American Spring. When tens of American patriots came to overthrow the government. And see, those little pricks, they're treasonous too. But you don't necessarily want to round them all up, because then you martyrize them. Note coming in from Ron in Raleigh. We got a sign, an old sign, Ron says, gathering dust around Smithfield, North Carolina. It says, "Welcome to Klan Country." Put that right there next to that secede billboard. Let's don't. Let's let the dead past bury its dead. Titanic intellect. What do you mean? It's treason. Well, you know, you're arguing in favor of rebellion. But isn't it interesting that when free market, when a business makes a choice based upon market forces, that suddenly that's Stalinism? When in fact it couldn't be anything less Stalinistic. And, okay, this story, totally different topic, sort of similar people, though. Story comes out of Taliban, Indiana. And I warn you, it is sadder than hell.
The Nazis are taking everything that we better get.
Oh, back. Hush. There's more of that instantaneously starting audio. Merrillville, Taliban, Indiana. Cash Irby Jr. 4-year-old Cash Irby Jr. You know, there in Taliban, Indiana, they're dedicated to protecting freedom. And you can't protect freedom unless you got a lot of freedom protectors. Now, this is Northwest Indiana, Merrillville, so I guess up in the greater Chicagoland area. Yeah. 4-year-olds are a curious lot. I mean, aren't they strange, a curious lot? Four-year-olds are curious. The whole world is still new to a four-year-old and begs for exploration. So little Cash Irby Jr.'s parents, well, they were protecting freedom in their home. Because the only way to stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. And the argument, or the facts are, as they were explained, that little Cash Irby Jr.'s parents had him a freedom protector that they kept on a high shelf inside a closet. You know how this ends, don't you? It's a hell of a thing to go into 26 minutes into the program. And you know what? I got to thinking about this story, and it infuriates me, and it breaks my heart. And I realized why it's so hard for the for-profit media to cover a story like this, because there's no way to bounce over to a happy story afterward and have everything be okay. Or maybe, you know, cut to a commercial for the used car lot on the local news. Because at that point in time, it's just a little bit crass to be hustling something on the back of a four-year-old who, if you haven't figured it out by now, is dead. This happened this past Saturday. A family member said the gun was placed on a high shelf inside a closet. Mommy and Daddy's closet could probably qualify in any home in America, or most of the world for that matter, as an attractive nuisance. It begs for exploration because it's Mommy and Daddy's room. Crawling under Mommy and Daddy's bed. Jumping on Mommy and Daddy's bed. And going for a look-see inside Mommy and Daddy's closet. And so little Cash Irby Jr. Apparently had to have climbed on something. I mean, he was working at it. He had to stack some stuff up, little four-year-old fella that he was. Cash Irby Jr.'s mama and daddy were off tending to their five-year-old daughter and their other one-year-old son when they heard a gunshot. Apparently what Cash Irby Jr. had done is he had found the firearm, and he didn't want to get caught in Mommy and Daddy's bedroom, so he took the firearm into his bedroom, and that's where he made the gun go bang and made a whole bunch of his head go away. Lake County coroner ruled the boy's death an accident. When emergency responders arrived, they found the little boy unresponsive, and he was pronounced dead at an area hospital. Because you see, and we have to do a little consideration here. Four-year-olds, and maybe I'm wrong. I'm open to education here if I am. Four-year-olds seldom know the full process by which one causes a firearm to fire. They gotta have a little bit of, well, help. Right? In this case, the help came in the form of Mommy and Daddy keeping their freedom protector loaded and ready to fire. Because who could imagine that a curious little four-year-old would ever climb all the way to the top of a shelf and find there a treasure, a gun, and climb carefully back down with it and go into his bedroom and shoot himself with it. And, of course, there are different mechanics involved. If it was a semi-automatic pistol, it's one thing. If it was a revolver, it's another. There are some details that are left wanting in this story. Did the firearm have a safety? Was the safety, if the firearm had a safety, was the safety in the on position or the off position? Was it a semi-automatic or was it a wheel gun? All these things matter. But like I said, the for-profit media are loath to really go in depth in covering a story like this. Because if you start asking the detailed questions, you find yourself coming to inquiries that you'd just as soon not make. I think I was 7 years old when I picked up the phone and the man with the stern voice on the other end asked to speak to my mother or father. And identified himself as Detective Sergeant of the Atlanta, Georgia Police Department. And it is absolutely burned into my brain that moment. We had one phone in the house. And it was a wall unit hung on the wall of the kitchen, just to the left of the kitchen door that went out into the dining room. And I will never forget watching my mother go absolutely to pieces as a man in Atlanta, Georgia, explained to her that my brother was dead of a gunshot wound to the head. I'm sorry if this is trigger material for anybody, but it's hard to do these accounts without... Yeah. But she went all to pieces and then gathered herself back together, hung up the phone, immediately picked it up, dialed my father at the plant, and said, "Come home quick," and then explained why. Now, there had never been a firearm in our home. I wasn't taught to deal with firearms. I guess my father and mother were not patriotic enough. But somewhere along the way, someone had taught my 16-year-old brother how to deal with them. And at a house in a suburb of Atlanta, Georgia, not knowing there was one in the chamber, not knowing that the pistol would fire if the clip was out, a round was discharged into his brains. And I don't even think it made the evening news, which is just as well, I guess. But this is a four-year-old, a little four-year-old boy who had a five-year-old sister and a one-year-old baby brother. And because of the culture of goddamned guns that covers this country like a blanket of congealed blood. This country is down one four-year-old. And oddly enough, oddly enough, the NRA on during with stories like this, they go to ground. They got nothing to say. They won't speak truth. They won't speak the facts. That this is the price that the National Rifle Association and the gun owners of America and all the other weird, paranoid, short-dicked freaks in the world demand be paid for their morbid fascination with firearms. And I hate them. And I don't ask this rhetorically, how do you cope if you're this little fella's mama and daddy? How do you cope with the knowledge that you left a firearm ready to fire in your home where your four-year-old child could get at it? What kind of rationalization do you engage in to say, well, it happens? You see, that's what we say when it's somebody else's four-year-old, or nine-year-old, or two-year-old. It seems like there's a couple of stories every week about a child being dusted off this planet. Because of the sick fascination and the murderous profit motive. Of the National Rifle Association and gun owners of America and Smith & Wesson and Sturm Ruger and Winchester and Remington and Taurus and Glock and Sig Sauer and Walther and on and on. Mental health professionals, how do you get a mother and a father through a time like this? When they're sitting in the counselor's office and they say, it's our fault. What does the counselor say? Well, yeah. Because the only other alternative is to ascribe fault to a four-year-old. And we have a culture that says that, if you ever go have a cup of coffee in law school, they'll tell you about the rule of sevens. From zero to seven, we tend to say that no child is capable of forming any kind of legal intent. 7 to 14, gray area. 14 up, game on. How do you deal with that? And if you can come to any conclusion whatsoever, how do you go about the business of being Wayne LaPierre or that disgusting Larry Pratt? Prattled. Mr. LaPierre, here's your précis of all the children blown away in the name of freedom this week. Too bad that they hadn't participated in our Eddie Eagle firearm safety program. Yeah, but one of them was only two. It's never too early to start. I don't have an answer. I really don't. I don't know. I don't even remotely know Because, see, I watched, even though I was just seven, I watched my parents go through it. I watched when they tried to say that the firearm belonged to my brother, and my father and mother both looked at him and said, no, it doesn't. It didn't. It never could have. No. And it turned out it didn't belong to him. But since he was killed by it, they sent us home with it anyway. Yeah. My father always said better that we should have it and make sure that it never kills again than run the risk of it getting into somebody else's hands and killing another child. But he never really knew how to go about having it destroyed. And of course, in this America, this 21st century America, even mentioning that you might destroy a firearm, well, by God, that's heresy. That's unpatriotic. That's treasonous. Poor little Cash Irby Jr. You know, if you got two or three little ones, it really is a full-time job keeping up with them. And sometimes they get out of sight. And you worry about things like them sticking their fingers in light sockets, and that's why you can go to stores in this country and buy little light socket blocks, or, you know, electrical plug blocks, so they can't stick their little fingers in the plugs and get electrocuted. And that's why we tell children, don't touch the stove. Hot. Burn the baby. And I'll bet you that house had probably been baby-proofed, baby gates, blocks in the outlets that weren't in use. But we reserve a special reverence for firearms because they're protecting freedom. In the chat room, Kathy's saying, I mean, you cannot trust a four-year-old alone, ever. And then she says, especially if you have a loaded gun in the house. Why? 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 Jack in Shreveport with a note. Subject line, gun related. As I was listening to you, I saw on the TV Mitch McConnell and recalled seeing recently him holding up a rifle on stage at some pig-licking convention. Oh, yeah. And it turned out he wasn't holding the shooting gun right, and his Democratic opponent had great sport with him for being a sissy man who didn't... what kind of Kentuckian don't know how to hold a gun right? Marty asking... what's the company that made a 007-style signature gun? Their U.S. rep got so many complaints and threats, that company won't even try to market the gun here. What are you talking about, the Walther PPK? You can get a PPK. You can get a PPK and a PPG and a PPJ and a PB&J, and hell yeah. And I know that is a tough, tough news story to deal with in a broadcast. But I don't know that it would be any less tough if we did it in the third hour than it is doing it in the first hour. Because I don't know that there's a... But see, if some godforsaken freak of the right wing, you know, a freedom protector, Wolverines! I miss Marie Verb. We're listening. Well, you're just politicizing the situation. You're goddamn right I am. And I recognize that I just set up a straw man and beat the shit out of it, too. But I am politicizing the situation because, see, if nobody will politicize the situation, that means we wind up with more dead four-year-olds. And at some point in time, I would like to think that this country has enough morals, enough ethics, enough gumption to stop blowing away its four-year-olds. You know, you're forever hearing the anti-abortion goobers. Well, what about them 70 million little babies, precious babies, that's been aborted since 1973? One of them might have cured cancer by now. Well, why can't we argue that the little children that have been blown away for the sake of the gun industry might have cured cancer? God, did you see? I don't even think I can. I don't have it handy, and I don't know that I want to. I don't know that I want to even hear it. But there's a clip out there. There was a group of people gathered to talk about firearm deaths and the ravages that firearms take on our country. And lo and behold, Alex Jones gets all up in the dude's face and starts screaming at him about,
do you know that only 2% of gun crimes committed in this country are committed with assault rifles?
Oh, little Alex was so proud of himself. He done spent all that time memorizing that statisticum. And the fella he was screaming at looked at him and said, no, Alex, I don't know that, but I do know that my daughter was killed, murdered with an assault weapon. And all the wind just went right out of Alex Jones's sails. And then there's the member of what's the name of the organization? Mothers Demand Action on Gun Violence. One of the women was coming home one evening when a guy dressed all in black stepped out of the shadows and pointed a gun at her and said, don't you wish you had a gun now? And proceeded to hose her down with a very real-looking super soaker water rifle. And ran away. Because, see, nothing. What's the message there? That the people who don't want guns have to have guns because the people who have guns are willing to simply stalk and torment the people who don't have them? Yeah. Nice comment in the chat room. Larry says, politics, classically defined as the conflict of values. So the question is, do we value the four-year-olds? And the obvious answer, though I am not proud to note it, the obvious answer is no, we do not. Or at least we do not value the four-year-olds as much as we value Smith & Wesson or Sturm Ruger. Or Remington, or Taurus, or Sig Sauer, or Glock, or Steyr, or Browning. We do not value an average four-year-old in America as much as we value those corporations, because corporations are people too, my friend. We We do not value four-year-olds in this country as much as we value a tertiary syphilis victim like Wayne LaPierre or Larry Pratt. Because they got lots of money and they're protecting freedom. And so if we just have to drag a little four-year-old up onto the blood-soaked altar of the Second Amendment and slaughter one every now and then, well, hell, that's just the price of freedom, isn't it? Sure. Why not? And there's, you know, there's oodles of these stories. This is just one representative sample. If I was so inclined, I could probably pull up a half a dozen dead kid stories. And it's not like they were run over in the street or a victim of some sort of pitiful drowning accident. They're dead because our country has a sick masturbation fantasy with guns. I mean, these things are all over the place. Not the guns, the dead kid stories. Let's see. I'll bet you we have no small number of members of the Horn Family Commune who know where Sandusky, Ohio is. Yeah. Headline, no arrests after seven shot, one badly beaten in Sandusky bar. Because, see, Ohio has that wonderful new freedom protecting law that says you can carry your gun to the bar. According to Toledo News Now, no arrests have been made and investigation continues after an incident early Sunday morning at a bar in Sandusky where seven people were shot and one person was badly beaten. According to the Sandusky Police Department, the incident occurred around 4 a.m. at DJ's Sports Bar. Police say seven people were shot, but their injuries are not expected to be life-threatening. An eighth victim was flown to an area hospital by Life Flight. An update on the victim's conditions has not yet been released. Neighbors say Gino's is a restaurant by day and a popular hangout by night. While they say it sometimes gets rowdy, they never expected the scene they saw on Sunday. Tiffany Hathorn said, who lives behind Gino, said, I was terrified. Me and my kids, you know, went in the back room and I just turned the fan up so they couldn't hear. The sight and sounds of people getting shot left neighbors and partygoers shocked. Freedom, baby. You know it. By the way, the shooter had a concealed carry permit, which he had taken to the bar. Because Wolverines! Right? But these stories are all over the place. And, yes, I promise this is Titanic Tuesday, and we'll find something else to talk about. By the way, an update coming in. I didn't understand what Marty was asking about, but, yeah, the Armatix IP1 require. Yeah, we talked about that a couple of weeks ago. requires a watch-like RFID device matching up to the weapon, and the weapon won't fire if the device isn't, you know, in range. Yeah, no, that's very much a reality. And people who want to sell that firearm in the United States, we're talking about the merchant, you know, the merchants who sell other guns too. You know, they sell other guns to parents who load the gun and put it on a high shelf in the closet, and then their 4-year-old climbs up and gets the gun, takes it into the bedroom, and blows his head off. But for trying to sell a gun that can't be used that way, these gun dealers are receiving death threats. And oddly enough, they're not receiving death threats from Moms Demand Action on gun violence. They're receiving death threats from loyal, freedom-protecting, Second Amendment-worshipping gun rights advocates. Because they don't want no guns that can't everybody shoot. They don't want a gun that if it's a home defense situation and they decide to use their shooting gun, that the bad guy can take it away from them and blow them the hell away. That ain't freedom. It's only freedom if anybody who wants to get who gets hold of it can use that damn gun. That's the definition of freedom. Because you know when the jackbooted thugs of the new United States government, with their shiny jackboots on our necks, decide to come for us in their black helicopters, well, you know what good is it if daddy goes down a shooting, but mama needs to pick up the gun and start returning fire too, but she can't because she's got that anti-freedom communist bracelet still on daddy's cold dead hand. See how freedom dies? Yeah, damn straight. Thank you very much, Diane. Note coming from Diane in Kansas, Stan. Salutations to the horn and to Bob Kincaid's ability to facilitate vitally important conversation. Thank you, Diane. So that means that we are just $10 away from having Robert's Up Over Down Under challenge for the 20th of the month met, and then we can work on having somebody meet and that, and the next thing you know, we might be on the way to getting out of the hole. Like Robert said, it'd be nice to get up on dry ground for a change. Marty noting, Ohio clearly needs a law to administer a field sobriety test to people involved in shootings in bars. After all, if you can be prosecuted for drinking while driving while intoxicated, shouldn't one also be liable for shooting while intoxicated? Yeah, but then, first and second offense would only be misdemeanors. Which, of course, raises the story of that wealthy guy suffering from affluenza who just got a walk on his 7th DUI. Oof. So, I don't know. We'll find something else to talk about. By the way, a reminder, we don't have the traditional telephone lines available to us this evening, so the only means of contact is Skype. If you would like to get involved with the program, carry on some conversation, you know how to reach me. Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. That is the contact number via Skype. If you've never sent me a contact request, well, by golly, go right ahead and do so. And you can involve yourself, and we can chat to our little heart's content, because this is, after all, conversation radio. So jump right into the conversation. It's fine. And, you know, here in another week and a half when I get back home, I'll be trying to box up the Comrex and send it off, and hopefully it can be fixed at God knows what cost, and then we'll get the regular phones back up and running. My apologies in the meantime. Agnes is admirably monitoring and womaning the studio right now. If it were possible, she'd be taking calls, but that's out of the questions right now. By the way, a reminder, Dr. Bill will return to the air this Monday. He's on his way home from his long sojourn across the country. So make sure you tune in Monday for Dr. Bill's Virtual Center for the Study of the Constitution and Civic Responsibility. Let's take a break. If you want to engage, like I said, if you want to check in on Skype, that's cool. You are more than welcome to do so. The Green News Report is on the way. Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. That's the groovy thing about Tuesdays and Thursdays. And I'm waiting for... there we go. I hate it when the computer behaves like this. Anyway, this is the horn. We'll be back. I'm Bob Kincaid.
It's Tuesday, May 20, 2014.
We here in California on the front lines, we got to deal with it.
California's governor warns climate change is here and it's very expensive.
Nobody alive in Serbia today has ever seen flooding as bad as this.
Biblical flooding in Bosnia, Serbia, and Croatia. Insurance company sues Chicago for failing to prepare for climate change. Plus,
after his stunning victory, he says he's going to transform the country.
India's new prime minister pledges electricity for all using solar energy.
All of those pledges and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We've been repeatedly asked,
don't you want to leave a better earth for your grandchildren? And we've all collectively responded,
Oh, well, that is a lot less inconvenient. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, finally, after weeks, after months of unstoppable heat out here in California, things have cooled down, the fires are out, everything's okay, everything's back to normal, we can start ignoring climate problems once again.
Unfortunately, not so fast. In San Diego, evacuees are returning to their homes and firefighters are gaining control over an outbreak of ferocious early season wildfires, but California's governor, Jerry Brown, warns it is only the beginning of what is predicted to be an extreme fire season. On ABC this week on Sunday, Governor Brown warned climate change is already impacting California and it's very expensive.
We've already appropriated $600 million, and in the years to come, we're going to have to make very expensive investments. We're going to deal with nature as best we can, but humanity is on a collision course with nature, and we're just going to have to adapt to it in the best way we can.
One way to adapt to it would be to stop using millions and millions of gallons of water on fracking, Governor Brown.
Yes, that would help. And activists are definitely pushing Governor Brown to establish a moratorium on fracking due to the drought. That record drought in California has already cost the state about $1 billion in agricultural losses, and scientists have predicted for years that climate change will make wildfires bigger and more intense. Climate change is also happening now over in Eastern Europe. A state of emergency has been declared in Bosnia, neighboring Serbia, and Croatia, where biblical rains broke all historic records.
Belgrade's outer suburb of Drenovac is almost entirely submerged. Other towns across the country have met the same fate. With no drinking water or electricity, the only answer is to evacuate.
3 months' worth of rain fell in just 3 days in some areas. The BBC reports officials described a tsunami of flash floods that have impacted over 1 million people, killing at least 44, and estimated 2,000 landslides that have devastated roads, bridges, and entire villages. And somewhere beneath the floodwaters are unexploded landmines, 120,000 of them left over from their 1990s war.
Yes, but it's cooler again where I live, so global warming is no longer a problem.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's not true either. Scientists have predicted for decades that extreme rainfall events will increase in frequency and intensity, and in fact have shown that they already have.
You just keep connecting those dots. What's up with that?
Meanwhile, Farmers Insurance in Illinois is also connecting the dots. Farmers Insurance is suing Chicago, filing 9 class action lawsuits against the city for failing to prepare for extreme weather. Farmers Insurance says Chicago's regional Climate Action Plan, adopted in 2008, gave communities ample warning to prepare for extreme weather due to climate change, but they failed to upgrade sewage and flood control systems that ultimately cost farmers millions in insurance payouts from torrential rains last year.
This is a really interesting case because, you know, states and counties and the country really has an easy time ignoring people. But now you've got insurance companies that are actually suing for a lack of action to prevent damage from climate change. I suspect this is finally going to make elected officials stand up and take notice.
Yeah, you won't find any climate change deniers among the major insurance companies.
Very interesting case. Keep an eye on that going forward.
historic election in India.
This is the beginning of a whole new era for the country.
Prime Minister-elect Narendra Modi has promised to transform India, and part of that transformation includes bringing electricity to the over 400 million Indians who lack access. Prime Minister-elect Modi has pledged to enable every household in India to run at least one light bulb within just 5 years through massive deployment of solar panels. That's also a major boost for companies that develop off-grid solar applications.
Interesting. This guy is a corporate right-winger,
yep.
But he's not going for more oil. He's going for more solar across the entire country.
Well, there is no question. Analysts say that he'll use an all-of-the-above energy strategy, but he is a huge champion of solar power and launched a very successful solar panel deployment campaign in his home state.
Well, don't let his Republican fans know about that. For much more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. And while you're there, please consider a donation to help the Green News Report stay on your public airwaves. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Okay, maybe I'd bump out with Across the Universe, too. Just for the... Oh, well. 14 minutes past the hour. We're almost halfway through the program for this Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. Thanks going out to Jay. Thank you very much, Jay, for finishing off Robert's Up Over Down Under Challenge for the 20th day of May. Thank you kindly. That's a big deal because, let's see, that takes us from being 260... We're only $165 in the hole now, so if somebody wants to rematch Robert, that would take us down to 115. Another rematch would take us down to, now it's getting complicated, and we can soon be out of the hole. Thanks. Thanks again, Jay, and thanks to Diane, and thanks to Asa for meeting Robert's Up Over Down Under Challenge. A reminder, if you want to jump into the program, you do so while we're up here in D.C. via Skype. Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, is the contact account for getting through to the program. And it's free, and it's easy. So help yourself if you are so inclined. After the grimness of our freedom-protecting segment of the last hour, I thought it might be nice to at least note that there are little wins out there here and there. One wonders how long it will be before the NRA and gun owners of America, gun goobers of America, decide to start threatening the corporate folks at Chipotle Mexican Grill, Inc., because, well, what was it, this past Saturday, a couple of gun-toting goobs in Texas celebrated their gun goobness by taking pictures of each other carrying, one presumes, fully loaded semi-automatic weapons in a Chipotle, what, in the Dallas area? And I got to tell you, for a long time I stayed away from Chipotle because I had read that it was owned by McDonald's, you know, McBurrito. But I guess there was a separation somewhere along the way, and it turns out they use really fresh and really decent ingredients, and, well, among other things, I mean, you got to appreciate it. I will appreciate acknowledgement of the reality of climate change wherever it may come from. And in point of fact, Chipotle acknowledges the reality of climate change and the effect that it'll have on Chipotle's ability to get decent materials, decent foods, decent ingredients for its foods. And by God, you know, they're a little pricey. A burrito's like $8 or so, but the damn thing weighs about 50 pounds. And you can pretty much feed yourself for a day on one of those things. Of course, now that food stamps are down to $1 a day, I don't think you can make one. Well, you couldn't use it anyway. Never mind. But no, after the gun goobs celebrated their freedom protecting and Wolverines in Texas yesterday, Chipotle Mexican Grill, Inc., exercising its free market power, asked that its customers in the future eschew carrying weapons into its restaurants. That's, wow, 2014. Please check it. I thought we were supposed to be at least to please check your phasers at the door. In their release, in their press release, Chipotle said, "The display of firearms in our restaurants has now created an environment that is potentially intimidating or uncomfortable for many of our customers." Oh, that's the understatement of the week. There's a Chipotle not far from here. It's down in Union Station. Yeah, probably 10-minute walk. And I got to, you know, I get creeped out when I go down to the Rippy Mart and some guy carrying a hog leg 44 Magnum with an 8-inch barrel on it comes in to buy a bag of Mr. B potato chips. Because you never know when shit's going to get real down at the Rippy Mart. I got this last bag of Utz's. You want to challenge me for them? Oh, for pity's sakes. I mentioned that Skype is free, Skype-to-Skype conversation, and Jeremy in Vermont noted, "Shh, don't say it's free. Some winger will claim we're mooching free talk services while eating our lobster from food stamps, all while driving our brand-new 2015 Cadillacs and talking on our Obama phones." That's also too sadly true. I'm watching the chat room and the Skype chat and everything, and our old buddy Psychoticus is on the line. Hey, man.
Hi there, Bob.
What's happening?
Bob. Can you hear me?
Oh, I got you. All good.
All good. Okay. I was just talking to some of the guys last night or the day before that regarding your phone difficulties. I just heard about them. I'm still on February's podcast, so it takes me a bit to catch up.
February was really cold, man.
I'm getting that. It's quite wonderful listening to you describe it in all its horror. Seeing out here on the West Coast, enjoying 25 degrees centigrade temperatures and sunny days, and you're all so cold over there. I'm just laughing maniacally.
Said the Canadian, right.
Yeah, the Canadian of all things. But your phone issues, would you be finding it amiss if we set you up with a phone number on Skype?
Oh, no, that would be fine.
Okay, everybody will just come in through that. You'll see. You'll actually get, caller ID again. And it's
I've never had that before, so that might be interesting.
So I figured it'd be like an upgrade for you. If you want to, we can go over the technical details tonight, and you can have that.
Okay, we can go over the technical hinks and kinks off air, if that's okay, because otherwise we'll get off into the weeds and just kind of get lost.
Yeah, it's dancing about architecture territory.
Well, it really is. And you know, this is not to say that the phone processing device cannot be fixed. I just have to be home to pack it and ship it and do all of that happy stuff.
Well, you can have it as a fix and use it as a backup in case Skype goes sideways, because you never really want to depend on one, let alone a Microsoft Corporation product, if you can help it.
Oh yeah, did you happen to see? I love this. You know, it is an open secret that Windows 8 sucketh.
It's a secret?
Well, no, I said it's an open secret. the People's Republic of China, the government of the People's Republic of China, have banned Windows 8.
For good reason. It's probably one of the easiest to hack operating systems
out
there.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, they're okay with Windows 7.
Mm-hmm.
It may be a hackability issue, but Psychoticus, I tend to think it's just because Windows 8 sucks, and if I had any say so, it wouldn't be allowed to be sold in the United States either.
Linux has gotten to the point where any of the distributions really, but Ubuntu's one that's cutting the edge. But it's gotten to the point where you can put an add-on, which is just a one-click thing, that makes it look exactly like Windows XP. And with the exception of some formatting issues with the browser, where you use a backslash instead of a forward slash, the changes for a Windows user to convert from one to the other really are token at best.
I haven't looked at Linux in a very, very long time. And now I will get emails saying, you know, caveman. But
You stick with what works, you know. You don't break what's not.
Well,
that's
the problem. A lot of the stuff that we deal with, I mean, how can I explain this? We've got a mixer that we've been using for years on the road that has been nothing but trouble, and it's got a FireWire connection in it. John Fox uses very much similar, well, very nearly the same one, to no ill effect. But apparently, there are things inside the way FireWire talks to it, and it talks to FireWire, and it doesn't cooperate. On the other hand, you know, if we were able to go out and pay the Apple tax, you know, which is the increased price you pay for any Apple device, the FireWire port on that, yeah, it talks to it just fine. It's beautiful. It's magnificent.
If you want to bone up on the skinny of it, EEV blog on YouTube has just done a 5-episode series on how microphones vary and how they differ. And really, I've been looking at this Yeti microphone, which is a USB microphone.
Oh, I know about that. Rick Smith has one of those, and he absolutely loves it.
Might be a Christmas present for you or something, I'm thinking. I'm just absolutely in love with it. But if you can get the computer at as close to that microphone as possible, all this, crosstalk. Once it's digital, you don't have inductance.
No, this is a different issue. This is, I mean, I could show you the emails between, because the folks at the manufacturer of this particular mixer, you know, they tried to help.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I finally got back this great big pot of word stew. where I just went, okay, I think all this means it's never going to work. Because I think somewhere in all of the explanation, it involved me doing a naked dance at midnight in Bill Gates' front yard or something in order to get Windows to cooperate with this system.
Yeah, I've had a few hits like that where we just throw up our hands and tell them, go to Linux, go to Mac, whatever, just not that. There's some really unique CNC-controlled mills and lathes out there that have to run on some really esoteric versions of operating systems because Microsoft won't work. The rest of the shop works on Microsoft, but you have to switch that over to some ARM operating system. Again, I'm talking French to Germans. But I was thinking more of the point that the Yeti is a USB device, and FireWire is proprietary in terms of its electrical configuration. It's still sort of analog, and there are analog components of it, whereas USB is really rather bomb-proof that way. It's really hard to screw up.
Well, some of this Psychoticus has to do with the nature of the broadcast universe. Because broadcast is very slow. You know, we hear all the time about those early adopters. Well, none of them are broadcasters. Because you've still got broadcast people. I mean, if I go to a Radio Row, for instance, there'll be, you know, 15 people, 20 people sitting at Radio Row, sending out programs via ISDN. I'm not kidding.
I can't imagine using ISDN anymore. I work with it. I've installed it. I've set it up for people. And it's just a mess. Well, it's so slow. What the hell? Get a couple of Wi-Fi in parallel, and you're better than ISDN.
But it's part of the broadcast industry. So when I tell you that, given my druthers, I mean USB 3.0 is that, you know, easily competitive with the data transmission speeds of FireWire, right?
Yep.
And so if we ever get USB 3.0 stuff, well, we'll be eating high on the hog.
Hmm.
But
and as for the mixer, a lot of guys who are doing independent music mixing for their bands and such have switched over to just one computer that does all the mixing digitally. So you don't get, again, one little thing doesn't break. If your computer breaks, you just install the software on the next system, you copy your files over, take the USB that your files are on, move it over, and it's, you know, a replaceable item that's cheap. I mean, you can go into one of these white box retailers and pick up a cheap computer for $200-$300.
Sure.
Instead of dropping a couple C notes on it. But I'm not trying to say how you do your business. It's just there's ways of doing it cheaper, and then you have the freedom to spend that money however you need to.
Well, there are, and some of this has to do, for instance, you know, we have technical issues. Some of the things can't be gotten around. We have yet to figure out a way to set up a six-line hunt group that doesn't cost a fortune. And we've been talking and working on that for 3 years. I think the idea of setting up a backup telephone number that we can operate through Skype, I think that's great because that would open up the line to people who can't use anything but the telephone, who can't use Skype or won't use Skype. So that would be great. But when it comes to having six lines like we do in the regular studio that hunt from line one to line two to line three, three to four, et cetera, you've got to have some sort of a machine that will handle all of that in one or two channels. And see, the beautiful thing about the Comrex when it works, I mean, they are brilliantly engineered. And when it works, what it means is we can have four people on the line at the same time. With no real problem. We have not found a way to do that with Skype yet.
Well, it seems Duncan manages the after night one. It's always an issue when you've got dozens of people on an audio signal that
that's not a landline telephone.
Well, if somebody could dial into it with a phone just as easily as they dial into it with their Skype, I mean, it would be seamless. It would be invisible to you and them.
Yeah, but I'm not trying to be dismissive. There's a big difference between that and having six lines blinking, you know, one on the air and five blinking on hold. And that's not quite as easily done under the scenario you're talking about.
Yeah, you'd have to have a pool working on one that you could operate separately from the queue. I've got a system that can do that for you, and it's free, but I'd want to save off on it until you've got an extra computer there that can run it, because you don't want the thing that has to run this getting any lag due to opening a web page or doing anything else. You just want it doing that and nothing else.
Yeah.
So we'll discuss details on that after the show. But in the future, when you talk about mining engineers setting the world on fire in northern states to make a buck, could you give us a warning and a heads up for ball gag and duct tape? I mean, it's no crap. They want to set the planet on fire to make money.
Oh, that's right. You're still back in February. You must be referring to the let's set fire to the coal underground story.
Yeah, it's a coal gas method. It's simple in theory, but they obviously have no idea. It's like a mining engineer decided I'm going to be a petroleum engineer or a refiner engineer. The guys who do the smelting never do the mining. The guys who do the mining never do the petroleum industry, refining or cracking and all that. And one of these guys read a science fiction book at some point and then said, hey, that sounds like a bang-up idea. And it's a horrible thing. It's like a psychologist purporting food science or a food scientist talking about auto collision industry specs. It's insane.
The classic example would be the third, you know, not even a B actor, the C actor, the D actor who looks and says, "Well, what I really want to do is direct." And the next thing you know, you've got Plan 9 from outer space.
There are worse out there. There really are.
But no, your point is well taken, Psychoticus, because I thought immediately of my friends up in northern Wisconsin. Now, that little documentary that came out, it's a beautiful thing called To Wisconsin with Love. They catch the flak from the iron ore mining company who wants to blow up this 20-mile-long, half-mile-wide, 1,400-feet-deep hellhole in the middle of some of the most pure, beautiful wetlands that remain in this country. And they got him on video saying, "Well, there's no asbestiform grunerite in the Pinokies. I mean, we told that geologist that he was going to embarrass himself, but there's none there." And so the next thing you see in To Wisconsin with Love is the geologist looking at the asbestiform grunerite under a microscope and saying, "This isn't just asbestiform grunerite. This is a stunning example of it. These fibers are really, really long."
Yeah, the serpentine minerals are really easy to identify under a microscope. Actually, you really don't need a microscope. You can almost brush your teeth with them. Don't do it.
It is, after all, asbestos.
My in-laws live in Tinuic, just outside of asbestos, and the effect that the asbestos company has had on the local community education stream, they actually believe asbestos is benign. And it's a horrible conspiracy by the rest of Canada to deny Quebec its independent resource extraction industry. They believe that, like the sun rises in the east.
Oh, dear God. Like,
yeah, and they're talking, and it's like, "Do you recognize I'm a mining engineer?" "Yes." "And I know something about old chemistry and such." "Yes." "And that I'm not from here, right? You think you might be in the bubble, or I am?" And it's like, They just can't understand. It's complete indoctrination.
Yeah, there's no bubble. I don't see a bubble. I saw a thing about the Pinokies on Facebook just the other day, where some right wing goober was saying, "Oh, it's going to that mine's going to bring 700 good." Well, they don't talk like that up in Wisconsin, but it's going to bring 700 good paying jobs. Bullshit. You know, even the company admits, there might be 30 jobs, and 29 of those are going to be coming from out of state. It's kind of like the fracking industry. Every time you confront the fracking industry, "Yeah, but what about the jobs?" Well, go into Frackville, Pennsylvania, and see how many Pennsylvania plates there are in the parking lot. They're all from Texas and Oklahoma.
Modern mining, and for the better, I have to say, damn be the jobs. We shouldn't be risking people's lives underground. But modern mining is all done by remote control, like it's a moon landing or something. You send your widget down below. You might have to send some guy down rarely below to set up the communication mechanisms for the widget that you're using to extract the ore. But once you've got it all developed up, it's all done from a little shed on the surface. And it's called contracting. Redpath does
that. But what down below? Most modern mining is little more than the high explosives and heavy equipment. I mean, there's still some underground coal mining in West Virginia and Kentucky, but hell's bells, most of it's coming off of blown-up mountaintops. And the same thing with northern Wisconsin. They don't want to go under the ground and mine out that 35% iron taconite ore. Good God, there would be no way that you could make that financially feasible. But if you can use a bunch of heavy equipment and high explosives and maybe three or four or five people, well, by God, then you can get into some real Jed Clampett walking around money.
With the iron recycling industry where it is, and the fact that Africa is really coming online, as is Australia to a degree, on iron production, the timing of this sounds like just a spit in the eye of the environmental groups. We're doing it because we can, not because it's even going to make
money.
By the time that mine comes online, it takes about 10 years to develop it up to full production. It's going to be selling into a flooded market. It's going to make no money. They might go out of business on this whole thing.
The whole reason, the whole reason for doing this, Psychoticus, was in order to gut the environmental laws of the state of Wisconsin, because Wisconsin had some of the most effective, detailed laws concerning mining and extraction in this country. So necessarily, the Koch brothers and Scott Walker, and this, you know, this rogue hillbilly named Chris Klein focused their efforts, because if you can break a state like Wisconsin's system of public integrity and public interest in the commons, then, you know, you can do it anywhere. It's like I've said before. Why do, you know, why make Wisconsin a right-wing hellhole? Because where's the fun in making Mississippi weirder?
But I think you really nailed it there, Bob. I think this is just a pretext. They're using this as a camel under the nose under the tent, and they're using it to see, just like Citizens United, was not about that one company. It was about giving the Supreme Court a pretext by which to open the floodgates on election funding.
Right, and none of these things are what they appear to be. It's the same thing. It's the same thing with the gutting of the Voting Rights Act. You know, nobody was oppressing that horse's ass in Alabama, but it provided a means by which the Supreme Court could pay off on one of the most fond wet dreams of the right wing judicial circles, and that was to take away the protections that had been put in place to make sure that Jim Crow went and died and stayed dead. You can say the same thing about the way that the Affordable Care Act decision was rendered. You know, the most evil Republican genius in the world is John Roberts. So in that decision, he declares, well, you know, the mandate's not okay from the Commerce Clause standpoint, but you know what? We can have an individual mandate because of Congress's power to tax. And so he thought, well, I'm going to stick it to that one in our White House by saying he's raising your taxes. But the real genius, and I keep mentioning this, and I don't know if it's getting through or not, the real genius of it was, you know, there were two mandates in the Affordable Care Act, Psychoticus. One of them was the individual mandate to participate in for-profit insurance. The other mandate, however, was a mandate of that Congress decreed upon the several states, whereby every state had to, and I know this is so odious, it's downright offensive. Imagine this. The Congress of the United States was going to force every single state in the Union to accept billions and billions of dollars in free money.
Communism.
Absolutely. Anarcho-syndicalism at its finest.
It's redistribution. You can't have giving it away without taxation somewhere. It's
camel's nose
under the tent again.
But the way that it works, it really was the camel's nose under the tent, because the Medicaid side of it was a single-payer system like what you have in Canada, only administered by the states. The states administer it. The feds give them the money to administer it. And so, if you're part of the Medicaid expansion in one of the civilized states that has it, you go in, you show them your little Medicaid card, and you get treatment. And there's not even a bill. There's not even a copay. And that is what had to be killed. And it was killed on a pretext. Now, the rationale was that the Congress had the power to tax, so the for-profit mandate was okay, but somehow Congress did not have the power to give away boatloads of free money for the states to spend on poor people.
You really need a Democratic majority in all houses and
that's why I was talking earlier today about so many of these issues. There's going to be a climate rally tomorrow, and I'm going to attend it. We might get a late start to the program tomorrow night, program announcement. I'm going to attend it. It's going to be hosted by several climate-concerned members of the Congress. Realistically, though, the reason that there's no action, the reason that oh, hell no has not been declared upon the Keystone XL pipeline is because we're waiting to find out what happens with the midterm elections in November.
It just bugs the hell out of me that nobody frames it in the statement of, who cares what causes climate change? The only thing we have that can possibly manage it is carbon dioxide management. Space mirrors don't work. Everybody breathing in all at once isn't going to work. We've got nothing else. There's no other thermostat on the wall. So why is this even an argument? It's a matter of whether or not we're going to control the Earth or whether we're going to allow it to be au natural.
Yeah, but see, that's because you're using that great big primate brain that you've got, Psychoticus. The people that are out there denying it are using their amygdalas. And amygdalas like big paychecks from the Koch brothers. And they don't care what's going to happen day after tomorrow as long as the check cleared yesterday. So consequently, because their wallet depends on them saying that there ain't no such thing as climate change, they say that. And lo and behold, they make the long walk to the mailbox and damned if there's not another Koch brothers check there. I mean, that's kind of nifty how that works, right?
Incredible. It really is. Yeah, so it's not, they're trying to make it secretive or surreptitious, but it's like the bigots out there using their bloody code words. They think they're freaking geniuses. Like, nobody can figure this out. Well, I mean, and everybody knows what's going on. It's not even an open secret. They're just bragging about it in the press.
In 1870, just to go back to a topic from the beginning of the program, in 1870, if somebody in Alabama had put up a billboard, or South Carolina, or any of the Confederate states, had put up a billboard that said, secede, you know, 5 years after the close of hostilities here, they would have gone, found that person, either sent them to an insane asylum, or just strung them up. Because you can't, I mean, treason.
It's insane. It really is. It's just from the standpoint of courtesy. There are limits to which you push people. They're not killing you in job loss. They're not when nations conquer other nations before the Civil War, they usually ended up slaughtering all their bloody prisoners. It wasn't until, George Washington decided to just treat the prisoners nicely because they're our potential future comrades or citizens.
Because it was a secession itself,
the Revolutionary War. Brits thought it was all impolite and such, but, you know.
But, I mean, you know, this hate group that put up the billboards in Florida and Alabama, you know, do those dumbasses ever think about what their economy would be without the rest of the country participating? Yeah, how much of the entire American economy is California? You know what? You cannot do – you can't just say, well, we got Texas. You know, how's Wall Street in New York going to look on a new Confederate States of America?
That's the thing that stunned me about, that TED Talk, when they were talking about the EU forming up. And don't think of Germany as a country. Think of it as a state. And when you start looking at it as a state, what's the nearest state that's close to Germany? California. And California, if you didn't have it, or what's the power of California over the United States? If it decides to absolutely tank its economy and just not grow vegetables anymore or export lousy movies or anything, what the hell would happen to the rest of the country? You'd have films being filmed in Arkansas, just down the road from Sister Fuck.
Oh, you did not just say just down the road from Sister Fuck. But you did.
That's
tonight's toaster. I'm sorry. All nominations are now closed. You'll be making films in Arkansas just down the road from Sister Buck. Oh, God. Oh, and that's a hillbilly joke, and I generally don't take too kindly to those, and I'll bet you Haley's not going to be crazy about that one either, or then again,
every
maybe so.
Every province and state in the world, every nation on the planet has a sister fuck somewhere that you can be down the road from.
I thoroughly believe it. You know, and I've got this vision now of trying to grow pistachios, apricots, almonds, lettuce. You know,
the branding is a bit difficult.
Yeah, in Texas. You know, out there in West Texas, where there are 30 towns that are not going to have fresh water anymore because of fracking.
It's really amazing. They're going to have to learn these permaculture methods for high desert environments and such, and that's environmentalism, and they won't do it. So they're either going to starve or die off or something. But
well, and like I said, my ongoing quest for a bottle of American apple juice is beginning to look like an act of futility. I have not ever since I had the little hospital incident, and I noticed that my hospital tray ocean spray apple juice came from China. I went, what? And then Dr. John wised me up and said, well, you know, apple pickers in China make $2 a day. Apple pickers in America make $12 an hour. Where do you reckon they're going to get their apple juice from? So I'm on this quest, and if I'm in a grocery store, I start looking at all the apple juice bottles in China, 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 China. And I'm thinking, God only knows where those apples are growing.
That's not going to last too long. The Chinese are running out of damn near everything and destroying their environment to do it. And it's literally, they're not going to be able to produce and be forced to produce.
That's the thing I keep asking, Psychoticus, is where in China is it still viable to grow a goddamn apple? What, you know, next to the great big coal-fired foundry? You have any idea what the fallout is from it? Or, you know, maybe just next to a coal-fired power plant. Now, this is not to take away from the fact that at least China is trying to do something about its hydrocarbon consumption. They're bringing more wind and solar online every second than probably we put up in 5 years' time. And that's probably a little bit of an overstatement, but you get the idea.
I think it's getting to the point where if it's not noticed immediately, if it's a long-term poisoning, people are willing to put up with it. And if it's immediate, they aren't. And so things like water shortages, people will act on. But if it's some long-term cancer threat, if you know, you're going every day wondering if you're going to eat the next day, long-term cancer doesn't matter. It's the list of priorities. It's the whole Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You got to eat first. Then you get to worry about your health security.
Yeah, and it works well from the corporate standpoint too, because it takes about 20 years to grow a really nice, respectable terminal cancer inside a human being. And after 20 years' time, if you look over at the corporation, say, "Hey, you miserable bastards did this." And, well, no, it's been 20 years, man. Yeah, you probably smoke or you're mainlining cyclamates or something. Yeah, that couldn't possibly be us.
It is problematic. If we had people living 100, 150 years and the vast majority of the population was over 80, you know, then I think you could see a substantial move towards caring what happens to septuagenarians. But until the majority of people on the planet are old...
Yeah, I forget who it was. I was looking on Facebook, and there's somebody who's down in the Kanawha Valley, and they're using as their avatar... The hazmat symbol for MCHM, you know, methylcyclohexane methanol.
Mm-hmm.
And it just says MCHM, and underneath it, it says involuntary test subject.
Perfect.
300,000 people are involuntary test subjects on the effect of some level of ingestion, either through respiration or skin or... So that would be respiration, transpiration, or, you know, oral consumption. Involuntary test subjects for the effect of methylchlorohexane methanol on human populations. That'll be interesting in 20 years.
I was looking at the Ansible, or whatever it is, the essence of licorice, the MSDS for that, and the comparable... chemical compound in MDHM, and it looks like, you know, it's going to be more toxic than that, and so that if you can still smell it, it is still toxic, because your nose is far more sensitive than most people like to give credit for.
Yeah.
But it seems to be that, again, we don't have any hard numbers on it, we just have to assume it's more toxic because it's a methyl group instead of an ethyl group, that if you can still smell it, it's still really potentially toxic. But you know, that's just wild-ass guessing, you know, a lot of wags in there to get to that number. So those schools that are
and all of this can be tied together under the general rubric, Psychoticus, that we have an ongoing habit in this country that has obtained for as long as this country has been this country and even before, and it probably applies in Canada as well. It's certainly been superimposed upon places like Peru and Ecuador and Bolivia, Chile, Argentina, Brazil. And the idea is, hey, we found something to make a bunch of money. Cool, let's do it and make a bunch of money. And you give it about 10, 15 years, and you notice that there are a whole bunch of dead people. And, wow, do you think we did that? Well, maybe, but we made a bunch of money. True. Let's keep doing that thing. Or, hey, mine's played out. Let's get out of here quick before they notice we're the ones who did it.
Yeah, BC is covered in hundreds of mines that have been abandoned without remediation plans. That's one of the reasons we have remediation plan requirements in the law, but if you ever bother to inspect them, the remediation plans and the funding thereof, there's a lot of very happy thinking going on.
Oh, sure. Consider Central Appalachia. You know, every time you go to blow up, every time one of these companies goes to blow up a mountain complex and make themselves a few billions of dollars scraping away six-inch seams of coal with lots of high explosives and heavy equipment and very few people, well, they have to put up a bond to say that they'll reclaim the land, and they have to reclaim the land to approximate original contour within the meaning of the Surface Mine Control and Reclamation Act, and they're supposed to be monitored by the Office of Surface Mining, and oh, goodness gracious, all of these things. Well, you know, the bottom line fact is less than 3%. Less than 3% of all mountaintop removal sites in Central Appalachia have ever been reclaimed within the meaning of the law.
And none of those directors ever have been charged with a crime. They go into bankruptcy, the assets might be redistributed, but it turns into a Superfund site, basically.
Sure.
It's an abandoned waste site, and the money's gone. You know, just it's been wasted away on CEO pay and the investors who don't give a damn if they kill people. And that's the sad thing about it. If you're not willing to prosecute for community poisoning events, like this recent spill in West Virginia, there's nobody going to jail, not even a mention of it. Nobody was arrested for, what is it, stream litter you were mentioning?
Yeah. I mean, Jesus.
Even now, I mean, it's 3 months later.
I mean, there are, I'm not kidding, okay? There's a statute on the books in West Virginia. It's a misdemeanor. It's called stream littering. And let's say you live up a holler somewhere and your bathroom runs a straight pipe out into the creek. Okay, You flush and all of a sudden, you know, you can stand at the other end and watch it come out into the creek. Well, the Department of Health has the power, the County Department of Health has the power to come in, cite you for stream littering, and impose a fine for every day that you have not fixed that problem. They can ultimately come after the ownership of your home. Okay? On the other hand, how many thousand gallons of methylchlorohexane methanol went in the Elk River? Not even, and that's what I mean, not even a citation for stream littering. Now, you know, if some poor family up the holler is shitting in the creek, well, they're up the creek even further than they thought they were. But if
a
corporate operator...
Just have somebody across the stream from where that leak went in with the artesian well of death and just throw a pop bottle in there with a state trooper sitting right next door to arrest him and just get it on film. But, you know, if that was going to work, the poisoning itself should have worked.
You know what? That would be a brilliant piece of civil disobedience. One pop bottle. I'm not going to leave that alone. I'm not going to expand on what I'm going to. I'm going to get in touch with somebody, and this will be a big damn deal.
Well, if it'd be perfect if the cop looked at you and says, "I don't think it's going to matter." Watch it sail down the creek and just sort of, it's like, yeah, I still can't drink the water.
Yeah, and all of a sudden, you're Tommy Lee Jones in the first Men in Black movie screaming at the monster, "Eat me! Arrest me! Arrest me, you bastard!"
Well, maybe some of that, what the hell was it? Plays in all the Looney Tunes, whenever there's a factory going.
Oh, that. Dun, 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 dun,
yeah,
dun,
get that, dun, and then it's like, dun, dun, okay, dun, how about two bottles? Three bottles? And then have somebody pull up.
Oh, no, no, see, you've got my tiny little mind whirring away now, Psychoticus. What if it is an empty plastic bottle, which is litter, with marshmallows in it? And somebody gets arrested for throwing that in a stream.
Better yet, put a GPS transmitter in the middle of it so you can find it later and pick it up and say, no, it wasn't my intention to litter. It was just my intention to float it down the river a bit.
Yep. Oh. Gone sailing. Exactly.
It was a drone. You can't arrest a drone. For launching a drone, we're all about drones in this
state. Oh, God, I saw a drone story the other day, though. These things are really out there, and people have them. Well, on the one hand, it was really handy that there's some company that will fly a drone over a site for a certain amount of money and get you video footage back. It came in really handy when that bomb train blew up in Lynchburg, Virginia, because they flew a drone over it, and lo and behold, it was some pretty stirring footage. On the other hand,
I don't need to pay for the helicopter anymore.
On the other hand, I saw a story the other day of some creeper and his puberty maddened son sitting behind a dune at a beach, perving with their drone, hovering over women laying out on the beach. And I thought, really?
Well, I was more disturbed by the guy who was showing you how to 3D print out a gun and attach it to your drone with a single shotgun shell.
Oh, God.
Imagine a few of those flying in formation over the next protest. Who fired first? Who knows?
Exactly. Hey, Psychoticus, this has been a great conversation. It's nice to hear from you. It's been too long.
Thanks for the call, and thanks for letting me talk, and take care, eh?
Oh, my pleasure, and absolutely, and don't be such a stranger.
Won't be. Cheers.
All right, bye now. Our buddy Psychoticus calling from British Columbia. Great, great conversation. Thank you very much. Lo and behold, here we are, two-thirds of the way through the program. It is 8 p.m. Sal has gotten us started following up on Robert's challenge from up over down under. Had a note from Robert. He says, subject line, don't stop now. My thanks to everyone who met my monthly challenge, but let's not stop, people. Come on. Let's see if we can fill in that hole tonight. Because as it stands now, we're $155 away. Oh, wow. Okay, yeah, we're $155 away from pulling up even for where we need to be in the month of May. $155. You know how the math runs. Note coming in from Mark regarding the VA issue, which I can't see as anything but the natural and logical outgrowth of the Bush administration's disdain for the warriors. We call them warriors now, not veterans, because, you know, veterans have benefits. Warriors just get wounded. But a natural outgrowth of the disdain that the Bush administration had for the soldiers and airmen and sailors and Marines that it got needlessly shot up in their wars of choice and were then no longer, by definition, useful to them. So Mark with an email says, how interesting that the VA story is all the rage right before the primaries. General Shinseki, a decorated Bosnian and Vietnam War veteran, warns the Bush Jr. administration they have dangerously undermanned themselves in order to take physical control of Iraq as U.S. Army Chief of Staff. hence placing our Americans in unnecessary harm's way. Why would this same general, after 38 years of service, then turn around and help create secret patient lists to jeopardize some of these same veteran soldiers? The short answer, says Mark, is that he wouldn't. What is more likely, the American Legion hasn't shaken its insurance and banking roots with other nefarious connections to DuPont and Goodrich families. I doubt the American Legion spokesman has seen a quarter of the crap Shinseki has. Sorry, hey guys, sorry about your failed American Spring, too. Semper Fidelis, signed Mark. And this is not to say that things that go wrong on the Obama administration's watch just get some sort of a pass, because they don't. But jumping Jehoshaphat. I would just as soon call bullshit on the Keystone XL pipeline. I want mountaintop removal ended, too. But ain't nothing going to happen till after the November elections, because that's the way we play politics here in Merca. Pity sakes. Just to give you an idea, I saw a graphic a little bit ago. Will Rivers Pitt posted it on Facebook. He said, whoever spots the problem first wins the prize. And it's a screen cap from, of course, Radio TV Rwanda, Fox News. Sean Hannity with his mouth open, of course. John McCain looking all senatorial. And some guy I don't recognize, and I apologize for that. But here is the font. Report. Obama administration warned about VA health care delays in 2008. Remember, Will Rivers Pitt said, whoever spots the problem first wins the prize. I was right on my chime in Jeopardy button, working it with that thumb, because it didn't take long at all. Report, and again, Fox News, Radio Rwanda. Report, Obama administration warned about VA health care delays in 2008. Oh, God almighty, who was president of the United States in 2008? Oh, yeah, the guy who caused the problems in the first place, George W. Dimwit. But all those nonagenarians out there watching Fox, hey, see, I told you, Marveline, that when in our White House done destroyed our veterans because he hates America, going all the way back to his administration in 2008. See, he's a three-term president. That's how much he hates America. He won't even leave the White House when he's supposed to. This is his third term. God almighty. What are you going to do? Ugh. Obama administration warned about it. You know what? How long until Ted Cruz decides to mount hearings about the 2008 can't even say it. I mean, they did Benghazi, right? Yeah, so we'll... We'll take a break. And if you want to get, if you want to participate in the conversation, you are more than welcome to do so. All you got to do is chime in on Skype. Bob Kincaid Horn is the contact there. Or you can reach out via the chat room. It's free and easy over at headonradionetwork.com. What else? Email comes in to bobkincaid@gmail.com. And at Bob Kincaid on Twitter, Bob Kincaid on Facebook. Also on Facebook, join up on the Facebook page, Head On Radio Network, The Horn. Search it. You'll find it. Should pop right up. Anyway is just dandy. We are trying to follow through on Robert's request that his challenge having been met, we meet the meeting of the challenge and maybe work our way out of this little old hole that we live in. Sure would be nice. PayPal buttons at headonradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Living in the wasteland of the free. We got creatures dealing in politics and dynamite. And their speech is growing increasingly unkind. And they say they are Christ disciples. They don't look like Jesus to me. Things like I am living in the wasteland of the fruit. We got politicians running races on corporate cash. Now don't tell me they don't turn around and kiss these people's ass. You may call let
Well, I've been lying in this dungeon since I was 18. 10 lonely years of my life taken. I've been living in the pages of a magazine. It breaks my heart to awaken. Set me free. Sleep, come free me. Set me free. Set me free. Now the state of Alabama says I killed a man. The jury reached the same conclusion. I remember I was there, hell, with a tire iron in my hand. The rest is all confusion. Set me free. Sleep, come free me. Please, 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 set me free. Send me free. Just remember your number and abandon your name. And hold on to your imagination. Oh, no, no. Set me free. Sleep, come free.
Minutes past the hour as we wind our way down toward the end of this Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. Plenty of time for conversation remaining if you want to jump in via Skype. Interesting note coming in from Shorty in L.A. Shorty says the problems at the VA are not the head of the VA. These problems have existed for over 30 years. Wait a minute, let me do some quick math. 1404, 04 to 94. Oh, you mean since the Reagan administration? Well, everything winds up going back to the open sewer that was the Reagan administration, doesn't it?
But anyway, I broke in on what Shorty was saying. These problems have existed for over 30 years. The employees at each facility have come up with more ways to do less while they're at work. So they created that effed up system. Patients have been complaining for years. Us, Shorty continues, and I mean us veteran whistleblowers, finally got to the right people to tell our stories. You think this is just heartbreaking, Bob? Well, listen up, Horn and Malloy fans. We have more whistleblowing to do. In other words, I suspect that that means there's more stuff out there yet to come. Note coming in from Jim. W photo op passed. That photo op with W jogging with that soldier with two artificial legs is still obscene. Bush had no place with this veteran except to use him for a second. I guess his press corps accomplished that mission, too. Infuriated, signed Jim. Be nice if more people were infuriated, you know? Because, I think I've got the body of work. I think I've got the street cred of not being just an Obama bot fanboy to say that this is not an Obama problem. Now, if it gets politicked, and if the problem is not solved once the problem is made manifestly, people are made manifestly aware of the problem, that is an issue for this administration. But to sit there and say that this is something that cropped up on Obama's watch is just crazy. I mean, I happen to be on the air and broadcasting back when the story broke about the horrific conditions at Walter Reed. And hint, that was not the Obama administration. I remember the story about how Disney, for Christ's sakes, Disney, look it up, you'll find it, Disney was brought in to consult on PR and imaging for Walter Reed and the VA. I don't know what they were going to sit there in the waiting rooms and sing "It's a Small World After All" to somebody with a traumatic brain injury. But I remember the story, and that was the Bush administration that hired Disney. Because the Bush administration, and like Jim mentions with the photo op, the Bush administration was all about optics and imagery, and never about substance. The Bush administration was always about, you know, we've got to fight them over there, or else we'll have to fight them over here. It was about showing W wearing a fireman's hat in the smoking rubble of the Twin Towers, or his padded codpiece flight suit from the landing on the USS Lincoln. But if these problems have been going on for 30 years, then odds are these problems were born during the hell on earth that was the Ronald Reagan administration, when they were busy trying to loot everything in order to enrich their pals. What grievous problem that we have in the United States right now did not have its genesis in the Reagan administration? The assault on labor? Yeah, starts in the Reagan administration. A whole bunch of the bad will that we have in the Middle East? Reagan administration. Worldwide instability? Bingo. Yeah. By the way, Luda mentioning that General Shinseki was a member of the famed 100th Infantry Battalion from World War II, the Purple Heart Brigade. The Japanese-Hawaiian mixed soldiers from Hawaii that Inoue and Akaka made famous for winning the Medal of Honor, as well as Pat Morita. So screw what those draft-dodging Republicans say about Shinseki. Have you noticed, however, that everybody has forgotten in the for-profit media reporting about Eric Shinseki that he turned out to be a damn prophet? With an F, not a PH. a prophet of what the Iraq disaster turned out to be? Thanks, Luda. Thank you very much. Luda just took us down another notch, nothing little about another notch in our evening fundraising goal. We're now at $145 to go. He says, hope this helps, homie. I haven't donated in a while to the Horn family. I got lots of hospital bills, so extra cash is kind of in short supply these days. But here you go. Thank you, Luda. And I follow Luda on Facebook, so I know a little bit about what he's talking about. You just get better. You get well. And see, that's a reminder of, you know, the sacrifice that is engaged in just to keep all this on the air. Thank you, Luda. Let's go to the Skype line. Jeremy's Skyping in from Vermont. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, Bob. I'm cool.
I'm sorry?
Can you hear that feedback?
Oh, dear. Try again.
Yeah, it's strong feedback.
Hopefully this will be a little clearer than last night.
Okay. Well, yeah, I'm not driving tonight, so.
That's a bonus.
As I say, the feedback just stopped, so that is a bonus.
Oh, good.
I was calling to say I'm glad that you tagged on along with Jim's note about the running with the guy, the AFT, about the flight seat, the landing on the carrier, when Bush himself was, not himself, but he cost, was it Massachusetts Air Guard back in the Vietnam era, probably tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars in training him to fly an F-16, and then he bailed on them?
No, that was the Texas, Bush? That was the Champaign unit of the Texas Air National Guard.
Yes, so it wasn't an F-16, it was probably a Phantom, but nonetheless, he...
He was protecting Midland from the VC coming up from Nicaragua.
Yes, and you've got that, and then you've got Dickless with the deferments for the... No, I was Rush Limbaugh. I get them all confused. They all look the same to me.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can always remember what Count Dickula did because of his hip-hop name.
Oh, God.
Five Def Dick. Because he had five deferments. He actually had to impregnate Lynn Cheney to get the fifth one.
And then we get people out there who are like trying to tag Benghazi onto Obama after the hearings, and Hillary should be tied up on this, and, you know, they want to know what they know and when they knew it. We know what Bush and Cheney knew about the planned attacks on 9/11 and when they knew it. 3,000 people, plus everyone else who's given their lives in Iraq, Afghanistan, not just Americans, we're talking Iraqis, Afghanistan people, kids. When I think of kids, I think of the kids who have died in countless tomahawk missile strikes.
How about the 1 million dead Iraqis?
Yeah, 1 million dead civilians, and that's a conservative number, they say, at this point.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Way more than that. And that was just because we were dropping cruise missiles and bunker busters on buildings at will. I mean, I was kind of a little more naive in my younger days, and that was 2000, so I've changed a lot in the last 15 years. But, not 15 years, it's been less than that, but good 10, 12 years I've changed. And I was watching a video on CBS, I believe. It was, was it CBS? I don't know where it was. But no, I'm sorry, it was Vice. I believe it was Vice on HBO, Bill Maher's news program. And they were showing clips from, I want to say, Pakistan or, I don't know, it was a Middle East country. And they were showing all these undestroyed cluster bombs and stuff like that. And they mentioned how the country they were in there, Vietnam, you name all these different countries that have banned the cluster bomb. Guess who hasn't?
Oh, not us. No. They're kind of handy when you get right down to it from a military standpoint. Well, it's like... back when he was still with Travel Channel, I remember when Tony Bourdain did his show on Laos, and he went to go and have dinner with a family who had lost limbs by walking over old American landmines.
I think I remember seeing that, because he was out in the field and they blew up one like a few hundred yards away, but it was still a magnificent explosion, and it was in a crater from 40 years ago.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I believe I saw that episode.
And then, of course, there was that horrifying, because it really did. It filled me with just, because I can't imagine what it must be like to live where your little chunk of the planet is like this. All that massive flooding in Bosnia and Serbia recently, one of the things that it did was disturb landmine fields that had not yet been disarmed and the signs that warned people they were there.
Yeah, I heard that. It was kind of that took my breath out for a second, because, I mean, we've all heard about those fields, and there's still countless fields in, like you said, Laos and Cambodia, which are mined, plus they have upteen tons of undetonated ammunition that fell and never exploded, which occasionally now a farmer hits or a kid playing in the woods finds, and guess what?
Yeah, you know,
they're missed.
Yeah, it used to be, I don't know, maybe it still is, when we send food aid abroad, the great big burlap sacks say, a gift from the people of the United States. Well, maybe that's the sign we should put up next to our old minefields, too. You know, or maybe, you know, the little cluster bomblets should be painted. A gift from the... Do you remember from the beginnings of the Afghan war, we were dropping cluster bombs on Afghanistan, despite the fact that Donald Rumsfeld back then said he didn't think there was any cool shit left to bomb in Afghanistan. No, really. Do you remember? We were also dropping food aid to hungry Afghans, and they were packages with peanut butter and crackers and things like that, stuff that could pass halal muster if we didn't screw up and, you know, send them ham. But it turned out that little Afghan children were getting themselves blown into their constituent parts, because the little canisters that contained the food aid looked surprisingly like the little bomblets of a cluster bomb. So they would go running to us, you know, yelling in whatever Pashto or whatever, food, food, food. And no, it's a cluster bomblet. And, you know, goodbye, little boy.
Yeah, now I know for a fact it was Pakistan that Vice was covering the other night. I think it was last night I watched it. Because it was a Muslim-speaking country, and little kids over there were basically saying death to America and death to other things, but they did specify this is because their country is still laced with stuff we dropped on them.
Well, you said Muslim-speaking. I think you meant, Muslim country.
Muslim country.
Well, consider this. It's very easy to get wrapped up in conspiracy, and I don't even like to say conspiracy theory. Some of this stuff is very, very painfully real. But especially where the CIA are concerned, the CIA, for the most part, could screw up a one-car parade. And, you know, remember, John Kennedy wanted to break it into a million pieces. How about that? Well, if you've been following the stories about all these the outbreaks of diseases that had been largely controlled through vaccination, on the one hand, we've got privileged, stupid Americans, people like, what, Jenny McCarthy?
Yes, who amongst others.
You know, who wants to help start an epidemic of childhood illness. Well, on the other hand, polio is breaking out in Pakistan again. Polio that we thought we had eliminated, Jeremy, and guess what? It's because of the CIA. Because we sent in vaccination teams, and because of the nasty business that the CIA had been in already, some of the doctors and administrators of the vaccines were killed.
Yes, exactly. Yes, I was gonna. I remember this story. I saw this myself.
And just recently, in the last couple of days, the Obama administration has promised that the United States will never, interesting word that, never, will never again allow the CIA to, and this is a quote, the director of the Central Intelligence Agency directed in August 2013 that the agency make no operational use of vaccination programs, which includes vaccination workers. The agency will not seek to obtain or exploit DNA or other genetic material acquired through such programs. The CIA policy applies worldwide and to U.S. and non-U.S. persons alike. In other words, the CIA has very steadfastly and sternly closed the goddamn barn door after all the horses are gone. So if the world starts burning up again from polio, we will, in large part, have the CIA, who actually think that they are patriotic Americans, to thank for it.
Right.
Because the CIA tried to get genetic information in order to locate bin Laden.
Right, yeah. So the doctors that work with us were killed by the Taliban after, because they thought it was terrorists, and then they assumed the aid workers are going voluntarily to do this work. We're still working for the CIA, so they're still killing them, so nothing is getting through.
And thanks to the CIA, the United Nations had to suspend all its polio eradication efforts in Pakistan.
Right, and this is another little blessing sent by us. And I was thinking, this all ties back to our own little Tea Party right-wing Nazis in this country who have pledged over 60 votes now to reverse Obamacare because, damn the little people, they don't need any help. I'm in the same boat you are now. You have Obamacare. I have health care. It's because of Obamacare. It's not directly Obamacare, but I'll be damned if that's going to disappear on my watch.
Yeah. I mean, this is worth fighting for.
I've had youth on my side, not to say traumatic things can't happen, but I'm going into my mid-30s here. You know, this is something I feel very important, especially you being in your 50s now. You realize the importance of it, especially.
Yeah, it does kind of sneak up
for me.
It kind of sneaks up on you, Jeremy.
I know. So I'm in that same boat, and that letter you wrote out you read, and then also Malloy read, really rang home the other night when I listened to it. So I just want to let you know that. But I will let you go so someone else can squeeze in here.
Well, thanks a lot, Jeremy. I appreciate it. And, if you found, there was, just to tell you, there was a little bit of Horn Family Commune activism going on over that piece. I've been told that and I don't know if it'd be okay to give his name, but I've been told that that piece has been put into Bernie Sanders' hands.
That's something Bernie would understand. He would agree with that. Even though Bernie's done some things in the past which people still want to smear him with, he's a good guy overall. If there's anyone in Washington we can trust, I believe it's that man.
Hey, I got no fight with Bernie Sanders.
Right, but people try to say he's strong on people here in Vermont back when he was mayor of Burlington. But people that don't like him say that. I haven't heard that from very reputable people, though, but whatever. He's a good guy. I've met him personally, so he's got my vote any time of the day.
Well, I'm trying to find a way to get a sit-down with him, Jeremy, so that... I think he's one of the few people that have the courage in this town to introduce the AIC Act in the Senate.
Well, I can tell you for a fact I haven't done it yet, but I will do it tomorrow. I've been busy the last 2 days, pretty busy. I'll do it tomorrow morning when I wake up. But he is the one representative that wrote me back a letter, personally signed, thanking for me contacting his office. Out of the three I contacted multiple times, he wrote back.
That tells you something. It does indeed.
It said that he's aware of it and he is processing it, and it is something he didn't quite say he believes in, but enough to at least say he's considering it and he gets the message.
Indeed. Thank you, Jeremy. Have yourself a good evening.
Sure, you too. Thanks.
All right. Bye now. Bye. Jeremy calling from Vermont. Call it 20 minutes of conversation left in the program. Thanks very much to Thomas. Thomas has helped sort of rematch the challenge that was begun with Robert's Up Over Down Under 20th of the Month challenge this evening. and we are down to $120 to go to get out of the hole. That's very, very close. 12 at 10, 10 at 12, 2 at 60, 4 at 30, 3 at 40. You know how it goes. So it would be great if we could do that either in the next 20 minutes or overnight would be fine, too. And then we can just start prayer meeting Wednesday tomorrow with a regular, ordinary $150 fundraising goal. Couple of things just to throw out there. We started the program with a bit of Confederate throwbackery, you know, because this is, after all, Titanic Tuesday, and I don't know if you can say we celebrate the Titanic intellect of the right wing, but we certainly do take note of it on Tuesdays like this. So we started the program taking note of some throwback Confederate treason in the form of the League of the South, who puts up billboards urging people to commit treason against against we the people of the United States with their, you know, secede billboard. Well, everything old is new again. Now, this is it's a little bit older because it goes back to 2012, but it has just come to light. This is representing Ted Yoho, and with a name like Yoho, he also has to be a part-time pirate. Yar, Yoho. Repig-licking, teabagger, probably birther, deather, tenther, booger eater, etc., who has a great new idea of how we can have true freedom in America. America. And we'll get to the true freedom just as soon as the advertising is done with. This was during a campaign stop at a Baptist church in Florida. Yoho is from, I don't see what number district, but it was at a Baptist church in Ocala, Florida, when Ted Yoho described his true vision of freedom.
The last election, we had around 150,000 Marin County people vote. 40,000 of those were absentee ballots. Do you want to talk about the complacency or the avenue to destroy an election? 40,000 out of 150,000.
Yeah, I think it's a travesty.
And the governor, by the way, he just reduced the number of voting days. My wife's a poll watcher. It used to be one day, election day. Uh-huh. When we let that loose, that led to avenue for illegal voting, for the ability to ruin an election.
It really is. And I can't remember which founding father said it, but he says, the ability to vote, but vote uninformed, is as tragic or as dangerous as having a loaded gun and not knowing how to use it. That was one of the things Mr. Scott did, was with the legislator, is shortening up early voting to 1 week instead of two. I think it needs to be cut less than that. You know, it's a privilege to vote, yet maybe inconvenience, but you know, it's like I tell people.
No, okay, I was trying to let this goober get all the way through, but I got to stop there. It's a privilege to vote. No, by God, it is not a privilege. It is a privilege, for instance, to have a hunting license. It is a privilege to have a fishing license. It is a privilege to have a beautician's license. It's a privilege to have a law license or a physician's license. It's a privilege to have a driver's license. Voting, by God, is a right. It is an absolute, unquestionable right. Of course, I'm such a hardcore, I don't think it's a right. I think it's a duty. I think it is a moral and civic, far more civic than moral, obligation. A duty of citizenship. but, you know, I'm funny that way. Have you caught most of this? He doesn't, you know, he doesn't like that early voting because somehow I guess that's lazy people voting. And, oh, hey, thanks for the cameo from the Goddess of Irony this evening. Voting uninformed is like not knowing how to use a gun and having a loaded one in your hands. Yet, oddly enough, not knowing how to vote the right way will not make keep a four-year-old from being a five-year-old. How interesting that Ted Yoho can get all wrought about that. But by God, if you tried to do something about keeping firearms out of the hands of loaded firearms out of the hands of four-year-olds, well, you know, it'll get real quick. But let's go back to Ted Yoho.
When I was told growing up, to be successful is inconvenient. If not, everybody would be successful. So it's the inconvenience. Voting, yeah, it's inconvenient. You know, you got to go shopping, you got to get your hair done, you got to do something else.
You got to do all that to go vote? Because we don't look at it that way. I've gone to vote in sweatpants. But then again, he's got a different vision of America. He has to go shopping and get his hair done in order to go vote.
I got to go fishing. But yet...
Oh, he's got to get his hair done, go shopping, and then go fishing before he can go vote. By God, that is inconvenient.
It's our privilege and it's our duty. You know, think about other countries around the world where they're shooting at you to vote. We just got to get people informed. But man, this is important.
And we used to have a day off to vote. But they took that away from us. The Martin Luther King holiday, and who could argue with that? That was a government conspiracy.
Oh, my God. We used to have a day off to vote, but they took that away from us. For Martin Luther King holiday, and who could argue with that? I think it's a government conspiracy. No tequila here. No swirly straw. Nothing. It's kind of pitiful, really. So, after talking about what a privilege it is to vote, the first thing that comes to Goober's mind here is that he used to get the whole damn day off to go vote. But then they give it to that Martin Luther King holiday. Meanwhile, of course, remember, who does cutting back on voting, early voting, affect most? The people who have to work for a living. Who are more impacted than any other demographic group? Dark-skinned folks. But here it comes. I almost screwed up. Get out. If you don't have the tennis ball and the duct tape out by now, you might want to grab it. Could come in handy just any second now.
I have some radical ideas about voting, and I'm probably not a good time to tell them. Right. They used to be have to be a property owner to vote.
Listen to the clapping little idiots. I've had some radical ideas about voting, Yoho says. You used to have to be a property owner to vote. Everything old is new again. Of course, Ted can't be bothered to mention what qualified as owning sufficient property in certain parts of this here young republic back in the day. Secede! Sec D! He wants to go back to the most brutal days of the American experience. No surprise there. He's a teabagging or peg licking. He probably thinks, he's probably one of those who thinks that slaves were happier down on the plantation, chopping cotton and singing songs. Lordy. note coming in from Tim. You sound surprised about landmines. You brought up East Asia and you brought up Asia and landmines. The U.S. doesn't care, I'm sure. No, I know that there are landmines all over Asia to this day, and no one's saying shit. The difference between, say, Vietnam and Bosnia? Ethnicity. Oh, and with global warming hitting as hard? I wonder how long before more Asian nations are destroyed because of the tons of landmines buried all over the jungles of Asia and now Afghanistan and Iraq. Remember Princess Diana and her work to remove landmines in Angola? Gee, I wonder if she was killed because she was reminding people of the destruction of mines in Angola. Imagine if she said she wanted to go to Asia. This would embarrass the United States, and the potential for embarrassment had to be removed. No, wait, that, wait, says Tim. That's a conspiracy theory. And since Tim raises the issue of how we treat Asians, let us go to Chicago. Again, this story is a little the beginning, the triggering incident is 2013. It's a police raid as the cops come barreling into a business called Copper Tan and Spa because they, of course, were defending freedom and they thought that there might be some prostituting going on at Copper Tan and Spa. You ready for this? If you didn't have the duct tape out and the tennis ball in by now, I'm telling you, you want it. This is the audio. This is the audio from what happened when the cops decided that they didn't like the cooperativeness of a young woman by the name of Jian King Klyzek, 32-year-old salon manager of Asian origin. Here we go.
Hi, how are you?
Did you cough?
Huh?
Did you cough?
Did I have to?
Ah.
I don't think I had to because I'm the police. Come back out there. Hey!
Come here.
Please!
Right.
So,
louder.
Hey,
hey, this way.
Hey! Oh.
What
happened? You
listened very well. Yeah, the audio is not the best, but this is a woman screaming, "Don't touch me. Don't touch me." And these are the cops restraining her and driving her bodily onto the floor. Yeah, we're just driving your face into the floor. Don't scream, all right? I'm free, and I thank the flag and God and Jeebus, who give such good stuff to me. Did you catch that? Like I said, the audio is a little bit dodgy, but the cop says, when she says, "I'm an American citizen," she says, "You're not fucking American. I'll put you in a UPS box and send you back wherever the fuck you came from." And she says, "I'm a citizen, okay?" And the cop says, no, you're not. No, you're not a citizen. No, you're not. No, you're not. You're here on our borrowed time. So mind your fucking business where I shut this whole fucking place down. And I'll take this place, and then whoever owns it will fucking kill you because they don't care about you, okay? I'll take this building. You'll be dead, and your family will be dead. Yeah. Interestingly enough, the cop in question has not been fired. Here's the fun part. They tried to charge Ms. Klizek, who became a naturalized citizen of the United States of America in 2011, 2 years before this ever happened. They tried to charge her with, the cops charged her with aggravated battery and violations of various ordinances. But when prosecutors saw the videotape that the cops didn't know was being taken at the time, well, they threw the charges out. Police spokesman Adam Collins told the Chicago Sun-Times, "The alleged comments, if true, are reprehensible and completely intolerable in our police department. We have codes of conduct that apply to officers. And if the allegations are proven accurate and appropriate, actions will be taken. Because, after all, it was caught on video. If it hadn't been caught on video, I wouldn't be talking to you effers. We'd have that locked up." Well, I added the last part. Jesus, that's sickening. To protect and to serve. What a laugh riot that is. Tim from LA says, "Thank you. I'm going to write this story and post it in Politicus and on the Horn." Look, the racist assholes. And guess what just happened? Our buddy Jay Cruzen just finished out the challenge for this evening, responding to Robert in Australia, and took care of the hole. The hole is filled in. Jay Cruzen says, "Because your voice is needed to make sure the 0.1% who are sociopath capitalists are beheaded, burned, eaten by the rest of us, I'll contribute again." Thank you, Jay Cruzen. Thank you. Note from Steve. Voting. And you used to have to own property in order that your property didn't have any rights at all, not to mention the rights to vote. Steve in China. Yeah, you know where I was going, Steve? I mean, there's property, and then there's property. So, wow. Note from Jeremy. That goober in that audio clip also thinks Obama is the Antichrist. Oh, that's got to be Ted Yoho. Yeah. Asa in Vancouver noting, "Damn, Bob, them cops sound like a pack of brown shirts. Scary." Well, that's only because they are. This is what the cops behave like in a fascist state. Oh, who was it? I interviewed a lot of years ago, Scott Ritter, began his talk in South Charleston by saying people would ask me, "Do I think we're moving toward fascism?" And he said, "I used to say, yeah, I think we are." He said, "I don't say that anymore. I say that when I get that question, I say, I don't think we're moving forward to it. I think we're there." And those Chicago cops, they kind of prove it, don't they? So here it is, time to get out of town. Not get out of town. We'll be back tomorrow evening for prayer meeting Wednesday. Thanks to everybody who caught us up and got us even. So tomorrow night is just regular fundraising. Thank you. Thank you, one and all. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox, busting his butt on a new album up in Australia. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACEACT, ACHEACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next on The Horn.